From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of September 2010, National Farm Safety and Health Week. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's a senior grains analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, the food safety bill, having been stalled on the Hill now for about a year, is getting a push to pass from some interested industry partners. The feed mills that supplied the poultry operations involved in the recent egg recall appear not to have been the source of salmonella, and the nation's major railways are adding grain handling capacity as the corn harvest ramps up. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. Hey, and don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast, and that it all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Bob Baisdiffer in Danville at 217-477-6016. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In Chicago, on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day lower in the wheat pit. December contract was down 7.5 cents at 731¾. The March at 761, down 7.25. The July, or the new crop wheat, did manage to gain today. It finished up 2¾ at $7.50. December corn futures at 508¼, down a nickel. March at 521¼, 4½ lower. May corn, 526¼, down 4½. And July at 528¾, down 4½ cents. September 496¼, down 3½. Next year's December 4½ lower at $4.73¼ in the corn pit. November beans today, $10.84½, 15½ cents the gain. January at $10.94½, up 16¼. The March at $11.02, up 17¼. May at 11.04¾, up 16½ cents. And July futures at 11.08¾, up 15½. October bean meal at 306.10, up $1.40. October oil at 42.05, 74 cents higher. Mercantile exchange numbers, feeder cattle at 110.65, down $1.17½ in the September. October live cattle at 98.15, down $1.25. And the October lean hogs today at $78.52½, 82½ cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. October crude oil futures, $74.79 a barrel, $1.13 higher. Ethanol at 214¼, up 0.2 cents. October natural gas at 383¼, down 18¾. Heating oil at 214¾, 4¾ higher. And the gold futures at $1,279, up $3.40. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 10,743. It's just about 136 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 81.3 is down 0.06. The CRB index on the afternoon at 279.64 is down 0.01 for the day. The weather forecast for the nearby area in Urbana-Champaign says this afternoon skies will be mostly sunny with a high near 85 degrees. South-southeast winds around 5 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear skies, a low of 64. The winds will be out of the south between 6 and 8 miles an hour. And then on Tuesday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 91, south-southwest winds between 6 and 16, gusting all the way up to 23 miles an hour. Tuesday night, 40% chance of showers in the area, a few thunderstorms, mostly cloudy skies, a low of 64, south-southwest winds about 8 miles an hour. And Wednesday, a 30% chance of showers, says the National Weather Service. A few thunderstorms again, partly sunny, high near 86. This is Wednesday day. Southwest winds between 7 and 11. By the time we get to Wednesday night, partly cloudy skies, a low of 64. Thursday, it'll be mostly sunny, a high near 90. Thursday night, a chance of showers, a low of 67. And Friday, we'll go to a high near 79 degrees, more seasonable as we get to the end of the week. Showers and thunderstorms will be likely then. We'll have more complete details of the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour and talk with the folks at Chesapeake Energy.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
You're listening to the closing market report from Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon. Kurt Kimmel joins us from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, Kurt, despite what everybody seems to think, there apparently is going to be a shortfall somewhere of beans around the planet, and they marched higher today. Can you tell me some reasons why that's the case?
Well, the speculative hype, the getting in, the next big investment moves, probably the theme, I would think. The number one newswire item that started Friday and has carried through today is the weather concerns in China. You take northeastern China, talk of possible frost freeze situation, temperatures dipping into the upper 20s, lower 30s. It's going to produce some mainly quality issues, maybe a little bit of quantity, but there's ideas they could lose up to 2 to 5 million metric tons of corn and 500,000 to 1 million metric tons of beans. And China being the number one user, buyer of beans in the world market, it's a good headline and a good conversational piece. It's kind of like here in the U.S., early frost freeze, and we'll see if it happens and assess the damage. They did have that part of the region go in late, so it is going to be a concern. But on top of that, we're talking cold weather in Canada, a frost freeze there. The southern hemisphere continues to have a hot, dry forecast, especially in Argentina and that north central Brazil area. So those factors added up, gave the trade reason to be aggressive buyers of beans throughout the day and even turn sellers on the spread, for example, buying the beans back and selling corn on the spread.
Indeed. I suppose I should remember it's all about the futures markets and what may or may not happen at that point in time. The question then remains, when you have November beans touching, not quite, $11, $10.99.5 on their top for the day. The January is at $11.09.5 as they topped out on the day. Is this a marketing opportunity for producers as their reels go through the harvest season and their fields?
We continue to believe so. As a producer, it still goes back to the wordage of you're going to be a risk manager or a trader, and as a risk manager, we got to continue to use the strength to push it out the door. Beans probably have been a little heavier sold earlier versus the other grains, but we definitely feel that need to take advantage of markets. Been doing a lot of cash sales, replace ownership on paper. That way, if the market does move higher here, you can participate on the paper side with limited risk if you go the option way. There's a lot of creative ideas, and I continue to invite everyone to give the analysts a call on this program. They've got tons of ideas that fit your comfort zone, because this is a dynamic market, and we've got a lot of market movement between now and the year 2012.
When those folks have been calling you today, they've had a chance actually to be in the field for quite some time now, and certainly I know a good portion of them were probably in over the weekend and maybe really starting to get a good idea of what their soybean crop look like. What are they telling you?
The bean theme seems to be better than what was in the earlier corn. It varies from location to location. But for the most part, we're looking at 50 bushel plus beans. There's some 70s out there, of course. But beans caught some late rains and are in there on ground that's been doing quite well. I don't know if we're going to go ahead and agree with the higher yield on the last go-around from the WASDE numbers, but beans do have potential to put together a big crop. Of course, the big question as we go in this winter, what will they do with harvested acres? But that's a whole different issue there.
Yeah, outside of the immediate listing area for the radio stations, it looked like western Illinois, Missouri, Iowa got a pretty good soaking over the weekend. What'd you hear about the rainfall?
Spotty, you know, here locally we're talking half inch, but you go on south up to an inch and a half, and you go on some western areas a little bit more. Also, too, we are seeing a heavy rain or heavy forecast in the northwest. So, you know, that get a little touchy, you know, especially if you're wanting to get some crop out. But, you know, we're still in the middle of September. So there's plenty of time here as long as it doesn't get to a situation where you got some low ground and have to use scuba gear to get it out.
What do you expect? What are you hearing about corn yields? And then what do you expect this afternoon's USDA crop production report or crop production, crop progress numbers to show in the way of harvest?
Okay, the harvest, we're in this probably 20-22% as a nation. Illinois is going to show the most rapid advance. On that report, I believe, you know, weather cooperates. We're going to continue to move this corn out probably in a record pace for the amount of bushels we're taking out. Moisture readings, you know, just keep dropping. So it's just a matter of how fast can you unload it, mainly. As far as conditions, the trade is geared up for a little bit of deterioration, 1% to 2% drop in the corn and stable condition on the bean side of the equation. So we'll see what those numbers are, and that might give the trade a little direction for this evening's market.
A drop in the crop condition as it matures would not be unusual, though, at this time of year.
Seasonally, that's the big thing, yes. That conditions do drop as you see it mature, yes.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
Hey, a dynamic market. One thing I just want to stress is, though, you know, if you put on a hedge, continue to treat as a hedge, there's some cases where guys have made margin calls and try to stick with a hedge position. They give up the hedge position but don't make the cash sale. You need to make sure you do those two together. So continue to stick to your risk management program.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Very good.
Kurt Kimball is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on a Monday afternoon. If you'd like to hear Kurt again, you can always do that on our website. The address is willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, from the pre-opening market report to the closing mark report on the daily basis and our weekly look at the marketplace. We call that one Commodity Week. USDA numbers are there, and so is our calendar at willag.org. I know you're busy and in the field. Just a couple of reminders. It is National Farm Safety and Health Week, and now might be a good time to shut the combine off and take a little nap. How about that? It'll help you throughout the day, the rest of the day, as you're working hard out there. So shut her down and nap it out for a little bit, and I'll be here to maybe soothe you through the process. Dave Dickey is here, too. He'll take you through the agricultural news for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, food industry groups say they will rally their troops this week in an effort to revive the food safety bill. The Grocery Manufacturers Association plans to kick off this week with a press event at which a broad cross-section of businesses and consumer groups will call for Senate action before the pre-election recess begins next month. Other sponsors include the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Food Marketing Institute. The food safety bill has been stalled in the Senate for over a year, despite strong support from industry groups. Investigators are signaling that tests at the feed mills that produced feed for the Iowa egg farms at the center of the salmonella recall indicate no sign of the strain of salmonella at those operations. That would indicate, investigators say, contamination took place after the feed arrived at the egg farms. A congressional hearing on the matter is set for this week. The nation's major railway companies are adding capacity. Union Pacific Railroad representatives say they've currently got 17,000 grain hoppers online and will be bringing about 1,000 more online within 30 days. Burlington Northern expects to have 29,000 cars online by October, a 5,000-car increase from June. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says that he expects the EPA to approve higher ethanol blends for some cars by early to mid-October. in line with a target that the agency itself had given several months ago. Vilsack says, quote, I expect that they will see that E15 is an appropriate fuel for some vehicles. I don't know if they will necessarily say it is appropriate for all vehicles, but for some vehicles, which will help us expand the market. The higher blends could be available by March or April of next year, assuming the EPA makes two approvals for use of E15 in 2001 cars and newer models by the end of this year. The Farm Ministry of India today says that India is expected to produce a record 82 million tons of wheat next year, but has no immediate plans to lift a three-year-old ban on exports. India grows only one wheat crop a year, with planting from October and harvests in March through April. The 2010 output is expected to be the fifth in a row to exceed domestic demand. Overflowing grain bins have forced the government to store large quantities of wheat under tarpons in open fields, leading to rot and decay. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. It's National Farm Safety and Health Week. The National Safety Council, as you'll hear, is reminding farmers and ranchers to take care during the harvest season. I'll have a report on one of the nation's most dangerous jobs. Farming is dangerous. Nationwide, somewhere between 500 and 800 people die in farm-related accidents each year. That fact, along with the 80,000 disabling injuries the National Farm Safety Council usually tallies, makes agriculture one of the most dangerous industries in the nation. Those numbers always worry farm safety specialists, especially during the harvest season. That's when farmers and farm workers are pushed, and consequently tired. It is also when fatal mistakes happen, says University of Illinois Extension Specialist Baba Heron.
Is that they get out and start pushing themselves very hard, maybe working 10, 12, 14 or more hours a day, getting less than 6 hours or so sleep a night, and not taking very many breaks. And what that does, it physically fatigues us, and when we become physically fatigued, it causes mental fatigue. It can lead us to making mistakes we normally wouldn't do if we were well rested and had taken a break every 2 to 3 hours. And it's important to do that sort of thing, because if you're not mentally alert with the kind of things we deal with around farms, the kind of machines that are fast-moving, powered by very powerful engines, that if we get caught in them or something, it's going to be relentless, usually, and results in pretty serious injuries and many times death.
The Bureau of Labor Statistics accidental death rate for farmers and farm workers is usually somewhere between 20 or 30 deaths per every 100,000. The injury rate is a lot higher. For instance, in the middle of the last decade, it was 6 in 100. Scientific research shows the best way to avoid becoming one of the statistics is to get a good night's rest, 6 to 8 hours of sleep.
If you get less than that, you open yourself to higher risk of making mental mistakes that can result in injuries.
Or death. The point is simple. When the crop matures, those bringing in the harvest need to stop every couple of hours and take a 15-minute break, and to get off the tractor or the combine at night, and go to bed, and go to sleep for 6 to 8 hours. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Time to check in on the agricultural cash grain markets. On the phone line with us this afternoon, Jenny Springer of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jenny.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I bet you're busy there at the elevator.
We are busy. We've had a steady flow of truck traffic all day, both corn and beans coming in. So.
I saw that the pile was getting pretty good sized outside the back end of the elevator. How much do you have on the ground?
You know, I'm not sure. I know we've been piling for about a week and a half now, just trying to stay ahead of the game. You know, as far as keeping room in the house and, you know, putting dry corn out onto the pile.
Pretty nice not to have to dry everything to come in.
It is kind of nice. I mean, we've had stuff coming in at 13-14%. It's going straight out. So.
Yeah. And are you having any problem getting any rail cars at all?
Oh, rail's going to be an issue, I think, for everybody this harvest. I mean, the railroad told us a long time ago that, you know, freight was going to become an issue, and it has to a certain extent. I mean, they've just been a little bit late on some things, but for the most part, we've been getting our trains on time so far, knock on wood.
Yeah, did they give reason up front why freight was going to be a problem?
It takes them 9 months, I think, to get a crew ready. That's part of it. And, you know, they would have had to start these crews back in January to, you know, really get them ready for this harvest. And they weren't going to put new crew members on, you know, just for one harvest or whatever. And also the freight car numbers are down, too. So, you know, when steel was so high a couple years ago, some of the old cars, were put into recycle mode.
Yeah, so while we were hearing about new cars a little bit earlier in this broadcast and that they would be coming online, they may be a little on the late side for this particular
harvest. Yeah, I don't know that it's going to help right now.
How's the basis holding up for corn?
Basis is still kind of wide, both corn and beans. I think you'll see, you know, basis snap back after harvest is over with, which will probably be in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it'll be quick here. So you think it'll be... Well, let's see, by mid-October, that wouldn't be all that surprising, though, I suppose, given the history over the last several years.
Right.
All right, and then the bean basis is widening out as well?
We really haven't moved bean basis a whole lot here in the last couple of weeks. I don't know that it will get any wider through harvest, but, you know, we will kind of see it snap back after harvest, just kind of when we figure out, you know, with the hole that Danville left as far as bean movement, you know, kind of where all the beans are going to land and then where we're going to need them. So,
our discussion on Commodity Week over the weekend suggested that an awful lot of folks were selling their grain over the scale. And I guess a question came up as to whether those sales were actually already on your books or whether there are new sales more than usual coming across your scale at this point for corn and beans.
I think that the guys that forward contract are filling their contracts, obviously. Guys are putting anything in the bins that they can. But the guys that are generally our DP customers have been, you know, taking advantage of the 7 days and pricing stuff out. They get 7 free days before DP charges start. Other guys are, you know, aren't even putting it into DP, and they're just cashing it across the scales because we're going home tonight with a 473 cash price on corn and a 1049 cash price on beans. And, you know, that's well above a guy's cost of production. And why would you pay the commercial storage, you know, at price levels?
Jenny, we appreciate you taking the time with us today.
And no problem.
All right. Jenny Springer is with the Andersons, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Stay with us if you can. We'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast in just about 2 minutes. We'll be joined by the folks at Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois.
It's National Rum Punch Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, Seth Boyden was issued the first patent for manufacture of patent leather in the U.S. Boyden is also remembered for a host of other inventions, including a nail-making machine and a hybrid strawberry. In 1842, Sir James Dewar was born. A British chemist and physicist, he invented the Dewar flask, the original thermos bottle. His design incorporated a double-walled flask. He created a vacuum between two silvered layers of steel or glass. In 1859, George B. Simpson patented the electric range. He called his invention an electroheater. In 1878, Uptown Sinclair was born. His novel, The Jungle, was a detailed horror story about the conditions in the meatpacking industry of the time in Chicago. It led to extensive reforms. In 1888, David Marin was born, an American pathologist. His research on the treatment of goiters with iodine led to the iodizing of table salt. And in 1960, Ernest Goodpasture died, a research scientist. He used chick embryos in designing the first practical method for developing uncontaminated viruses, which made possible the mass production of vaccines for diseases such as smallpox and influenza. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Monday afternoon and time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Josh Darr up at Chesapeake Energy. Actually, Mark Russo, right? I don't remember who I talked to. Is it Mark?
Oh, you have three of us here. This is Mark.
Yeah, okay, Mark. I said Josh, and I thought, you know what? It was Mark. Okay, so, Mark.
33% correct there.
Well, I got a 30% chance. I got a one-third chance because there are three of you, including John Davis, and I just forgot. Thanks. Okay, let's get back to the weather forecast because producers will want to know whether the warm weather we have is going to continue, whether it will come along with weather, and then when we'll get a break in the this warm weather and the temps. I think I saw 90 somewhere along the lines for our area. What's it all about?
Yeah, Todd, we're reversing this cold pattern that was very brief over the past week's time frame, and especially the northern Midwest, and reverting back to a much warmer pattern that will persist by and large over the next 2 weeks. Along with that will come some rain, but as far as temperatures are concerned in the short term, tomorrow and on into Wednesday, very warm days here across the Corn Belt with high temperatures climbing to the 80s, and even some low 90s across the far southern belt. And that will be then followed by a frontal passage coming through the middle to end of this week. That will cool down temperatures a little bit, but still talking above normal for this time of year. And as far as the precip is concerned, most of the precip here coming through, at least over the next couple of days, and especially with that frontal system coming through, that will be in the western belt. So in Iowa, Minnesota, the eastern Dakotas, that's the wet zone, if you would, coming up throughout the remainder of this week.
They'll have a wet zone. Will they continue? Because they've had quite a little bit of rain, and it might just be enough, I suppose. Will it stall harvest, do you think?
Well, not completely stall harvest, and it looks like the rain development will take place in various areas of the western belt, so that should allow at least some harvest progress to take place, but that is the area is going to see the most frequent rain activity here throughout the week. We expect specifically in that zone about 65-70% coverage, and amounts range from about 1/2 to 2 inches. So, continuation of what they've seen. But as we go into week two of the forecast, it does look less active across that western belt. So next week, it looks to be the period of more significant harvest progress.
And then turn your attention to China. It's making the news in Chicago. They've had some cold temperatures or expected cold temperatures. What are you seeing?
Yeah, we see a significant cold on tap here starting tomorrow, and then that persists through Thursday, even lingering into Friday. Coldest mornings here for portions of the northern soybean belt in China will be temperatures in the upper 20s. So this will be the first, I guess, widespread frost, and even some areas receiving a freeze here coming up on Wednesday and Thursday mornings. However, it does appear that the vast majority of soybeans are mature up across that area, but that is debatable as to what the exact percentage of those crops are mature across that area. But with the trends so far this growing season, they've had a very warm summer. Their growing degree days here are well above normal. So by this time, the vast majority of crops, we think, should be safe from any cold weather damage. But certainly an end to the growing season in the portions of far northeastern China coming up in the next 72 hours.
Mark, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Don.
Next week I'll have a one-third chance again.
There you go.
All right, Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Monday afternoon. Stay with us if you can for the Farming World. This is the Farming World. I'm University of Illinois Extension. News and information from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, U of I Extension, and Illinois Public Media. You know, it's National Farm Safety and Health Week this week. The theme this year is ATVs, Work Smart, Ride Safe. On the phone line with us from Bloomington, Illinois, and Country Financial is Commercial Agribusiness Senior Loss Control Representative Eric Van Asdale to talk about farm safety, and we'll start out with the ATVs. First, Eric, thank you so much for being with us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, Todd, I am a loss control representative for Country, like you mentioned. I have a background in farming and have an agribusiness degree from Illinois State. So growing up on a farm and working for an insurance company really blended me to support Farm Safety Week, and it's something that I've always been interested in. With that farming background and with the insurance side of it now, and helping keep my friends that are still in farming and family safe when they're out there.
What does the loss control representative do?
With our company, we go out and look at farms and commercial businesses and try to find ways to help clients avoid having a claim, or if they do have a claim, ways to reduce that claim so it's not as severe. We like to try to stop people from having that heartache up front rather than having to deal with us after the fact.
Can we talk just a bit about ATV safety? In the state of Illinois, there have been some changes in the law that allow producers, farmers, to be on the road with their ATVs. Can you tell me about that, and then we'll get into the safety part?
Sure. Well, as of June, farmers with a valid driver's license are permitted by Illinois law to travel on county and township roads to conduct farm business. So the keys there are that they still have to be over 16 with a valid driver's license, and they need to be conducting farm business, and they can only be on county and township roads.
What counts as an ATV?
An ATV would be any all-terrain vehicle and the new utility vehicles that you see out there, like the John Deere Gator or Polaris Ranger, that are becoming really popular.
Okay, so it would be what we would consider the normal ATV. They used to be three-wheeled, and I don't think there are any of those around anymore. They're probably some legacies, and now they're four-wheel ATVs, and then the bigger ones that we see, the Gators, the Ranger that you talked about. What are the things that Country Financial says are the top safety issues involved with operating these?
Well, there's four safety tips that we encourage everybody to utilize. They should always wear a helmet. They should never allow any passengers, unless the vehicle is designed for it, like the utility vehicles that have a bench seat and multiple seat belts. People should only operate age-appropriate and size-appropriate vehicles. So if you have children, they need to be on the right type of ATV, not on their dad's ATV. And they shouldn't operate one without proper training or supervision if you're a youngster.
How many losses do we have from ATV accidents?
Well, that's a tough study to find. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has a study out there that 50 Illinois residents died from ATV injuries from 2006 and 2008. That's statewide. It's not specific to Country, but that's definitely 50 too many. They did another study that was kind of interesting, too, that of a third of all deaths and injuries with ATVs were for victims under the age of 16. So that kind of drives a point home there about age-appropriate vehicles and youngsters being on something that they really shouldn't be on.
You know, I want to step back just once because you're in the insurance field. Are ATVs generally covered under the farm policies? Are they under the auto policies, sometimes under both? Where does the coverage come for ATVs?
That's a good question, Todd. It can come from several different places depending on how the client would like to insure it. Since we're talking about farmers here, on a normal farm policy, an unendorsed farm policy from Country Insurance, they have all the liability and property coverage they need as long as they're using it on their farm or on a listed premise. Like if they rent a field from the neighbor, as long as that field's listed on their policy, they have coverage. The problem is when they take it off premise, there could be a coverage issue, and in that case, they need to buy a special endorsement that we have available for that off-premise coverage. And really, if they have any questions at all, they can contact a local Country financial representative, and they can help them figure out what coverages they need.
Yeah, so
but if they don't have a farm policy, they can get it off of an auto policy and a home policy as well.
Yes.
We have that endorsement available on all of it.
So really what's happened is the changes in the law as of June that allows them to be on the roadway if they're doing farm business takes them off-premise, and they may or may not be covered when they're off-premise. Correct. So they need
So they need
the endorsement in order to be covered when they're on the roadways.
Yep, and that is part of the Illinois law as well, is that they are required to have insurance when they're on the roadways. So since that roadway is not considered a listed location, they should have this extra endorsement to make sure they have that coverage.
Do the ATVs need to have a license? I mean, when if they're going to operate it on the roadway, and it, do they need to go get a license plate for it, and that way they know that they need to be covered?
No, there's no special licensing for the ATVs at all. It's just the driver needs to have a valid license. However, the ATV does need to have some safety features. The ATV has to have headlamps and tail lamps that are visible, kind of like a motorcycle. The headlights have to be on all times, and SMV emblem as well.
Is the coverage expensive or not expensive for these? And I know expensive is a debatable word, but for instance, motorcycle coverage can be as cheap as $100 for the whole year, depending on what your record, I suppose, might be. So in that under $500 range or over $500 range, I guess is really the question.
It is under $500 for specifics. I can't tell you exactly because there's so many rating factors that go into it.
Absolutely.
But it's a pretty inexpensive coverage. And to think about when they already have a farm policy with us, we're collecting most of their premium on that farm policy. So this extra little rider will not cost that much extra.
That takes care of the ATVs. You have moved then ATVs to the roadway. And I suppose it's time to talk at this time of year, especially because harvest is underway, not just about the ATVs, but about all roadway traffic on the secondary roads, even some of the primary roads in the state of Illinois, Indiana, across the Midwest. But we'll stick with Illinois at this point because this is really a time of year when accidents happen in rural America between non-farm vehicles and farm vehicles.
That's a great point, Todd. Now's the time of year when everybody's out moving equipment around in the rural areas. And the rural motorists and farmers both share a responsibility for watching out for each other when they're out there on the road. So people need to remember just to slow down and be aware of their surroundings when they're out in the rural areas.
What kind of accidents happen and what are the causes generally?
Generally, the accidents occur when a rural motorist is driving too fast and overtakes a farmer driving much slower. I mean, rural motorists need to remember that the fastest farm machinery out there goes around 20 miles an hour, and they can overtake that pretty fast if they're going 55, 60 miles an hour or faster in rural areas. So they need to just slow down and watch what's happening. Probably one of the worst type of claims we see is when a rural motorist goes to pass a farmer, not realizing that the farmer is about to turn left into a driveway. People need to remember that it's illegal to pass at intersections, and they need to just be patient if they see an intersection or a driveway coming up to make sure the farmer is not going to turn in. And likewise, if a farmer has turn signals on their equipment, they need to make sure they're using that when they're about to turn.
Yeah, these crashes tend to be really severe, I suppose, mostly because of the size, the weight of the farm machinery as compared to that of an automobile when these two come into impact with each other. Oftentimes, there are deaths related to these rural accidents. In fact, where do accidents with automobiles rank in terms of total number of deaths per year? We don't like to talk about deaths, but it happens on the farm. as in any other place. So how dangerous is it?
Well, the good news is, as far as deaths for farmers go, last year was the lowest it's been in 6 years. We had 21 farmers die in Illinois. Of course, we want to see that number get much lower. As far as roadway safety goes with that, seven farmers were killed on roadway collisions, which was up from 2007, the last year we did the study. In 2007, there were 15 motorists that were killed in accidents and one farmer in roadway collisions. So last year was bad that there were more farmers, but we don't have the data to show how many rural motorists were involved in those collisions.
Yeah, so these types of collisions rank number two in 09 and 10. And the first one, of course, is one that we need to talk about too eventually here, is grain bin safety, because that's the number one killer of farmers in farm-related accidents on the farm.
Mm-hmm. Our data shows that the tractor rollovers were number one, but again, grain bin deaths include commercial. So if you look at the entire ag industry, grain bin deaths probably were worse. But our data is for specific
for farmers only,
farmers,
right?
Not with grain elevators.
Okay. So this is still a problem, and it really just means that when you're on those rural roads at this time of year, farmers are busy, the machinery is big, and it is on the roadways, and you need to be careful because that machinery is running somewhere probably on the roadways between 10 and 30 miles an hour, and you're running, if you're going legal, at least 55 miles an hour, right? So it
correct.
And a left-hand turn by a farmer in front of you means a left-hand turn and either a tractor or a wagon or a semi or something that's big, heavy, and really heavy at this time of year simply because it's loaded with grain and it can run, it's thousands of pounds. And it's important that people pay attention at this point to what's happening, as they do all the time. But it's just really easy to run into the back end of these farm machinery because they come up so quickly. The difference in the speed is just enormous. So let's move on to the grain bins. You wanted to talk just a little bit about those. Farmers are filling their grain bins at this time. I don't suppose that's the time when we really have to worry about it. Grain bin accidents very much, but you can tell me it's usually when they're emptying the grain bins when the problems occur.
Correct. Most problems occur when they're emptying the grain bins. The farmer will get in to try to help buffed up some crusted corn or bridged corn to get it down to the unloading auger, and unfortunately it'll get sucked in and get into a situation where they could get suffocated by flowing grain, or if it keeps flowing, it could get them all the way down to the auger, and they could get injured by the auger hitting their feet, ankles, legs, things like that.
And so how many accidents across agriculture, not just with farmers, but across agriculture, do we have annually in the state?
Well, unfortunately, my data is only with the farmer segment.
Okay.
And we had six grain bin, we had four farmers die in grain bin incidents last year across all of agriculture, just from my own knowledge of looking at newspapers and things like that. I know that number's more than doubled, but I don't have specific numbers to give you.
We're talking today with Eric Van Asdale of Country Financial. It's National Farm Safety and Health Week. This is the Farming World. More in a moment. Farming World is a production of Illinois Public Media. Please visit us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Learnard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Learnard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Genuity SmartStax corn hybrids, to farmers throughout East Central Illinois. Learnard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
The farming world is coming to an end on the first day of October after a six-month run. We thank you for your support, and we look forward to the advancement of our core mission, distributing regionally, nationally, and internationally information and analysis of commodity markets and agricultural weather. When the situation warrants, you can rest assured we'll follow key agricultural topics and stories, and we'll make room for discussions with those that influence the political spectrum of agriculture in the closing market report, which remains in its traditional 206 to 236 time slot. Again, thank you for your support as we wrap up the farming world.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Here's a quick look at the weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area. Tonight, mostly clear skies, a low of 64, south winds between 6 and 8. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, a high near 91. South-southwest winds between 8 and 16. They'll gust up to 23 miles an hour. And tomorrow night, a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Mostly cloudy skies, a low of 64. South-southwest winds at 8 miles an hour. That according to the National Weather Service.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
This is the Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's National Farm Safety and Health Week. Eric Van Asdale of Country Financial is our guest today. When we last spoke with him, we had just gotten into grain bin safety. Eric, why don't you tell us a few tips that producers can use as they get into those bins and begin to empty them out later this marketing year?
Sure. If they're going to get in the grain bins, the first thing they need to do is stop the flow of grain. So they need to turn that auger off, and they need to put some kind of tag on it so another employee doesn't come back wondering why grain's not coming out and turn the auger on. Then if they're going to get in, they should have a safety harness that attaches them to the roof of the bin. That way, if the grain does go out from underneath them, they don't fall into it. They should also have a lookout with them standing near the platform into the grain bin to watch to alert the authorities to come help rescue them if something would happen. And that person needs to be trained not to attempt to save the person if it involves pulling them out, because they're more likely to injure the person worse trying to pull them from the grain without doing the proper type of rescue where they relieve the pressure from the grain around them and then pull them out.
Okay, and let's wrap up our discussion today by talking about tractor rollovers. I suppose you want to mention ROPS and a few other things along the way.
Yeah, tractor rollovers continue to be the leading cause of farmer death in the state of Illinois. Last year, it was down. We had seven. That's better, but of course, we would like to get to a point where nobody is dying on the farm. Retrofitting older tractors with the rollover protection device continues to be the best way that somebody can reduce this risk of loss. And if they have the rollover protection devices, they need to use them. You see a lot of farmers will have those, and if they're hinged, they'll lower them so they can get under doorways easier, get under trees if they're using them to mow. But if they have the rollover protection device, they need to use them. They need to wear seat belts when they have the ROPS, otherwise they won't help if the guy gets thrown from it and pinned by a fender, by a tractor.
What is it that, what operation are producers usually doing when the tractor rollovers? I have some thoughts about that, but I'm wondering what the stats say.
Sure. Most deaths occur when somebody's mowing. Mm-hmm. Usually people are trying to mow steep embankments, whether it's a ditch or a hill around their farm or maybe a berm around a pond, for example. But the majority of these do occur while mowing.
So put your ROPS on and I suppose maybe try to clean up the weeds some other way rather than mowing would be a good idea on those very steep hillsides. Is there generally a grade involved? How much are, and I'm thinking, I don't know whether you'll have the stats on this, whether there's a stat that says, you know, once you get beyond this amount of grade, you really shouldn't try to take your tractor on that steep of a hillside.
That's a good question, Todd. I don't know that there's an industry standard that says specifically what grade is unsafe. There's so many factors that get involved with it, the wheelbase and the width of the tractor, what type of implement you're pulling as far as where the weight is on it, how high the center of gravity is, how loose the dirt is or if it's wet. So the default answer I would give would be to check with the manufacturer of that tractor, because they should have that type of information specific to that tractor that says, because of the way this tractor is built, you shouldn't operate it on X percentage of grade.
Yeah, I suppose what you really like to see is them either to take care of it in some other way or to have a very low, wide tractor with their ROPS up on those hillsides.
Yeah. Using some other method, such as weed eaters or letting it grow out. And you know, I just saw an article on the internet last week about places that are bringing goats out to put on these hillsides to have the goats eat all the weeds down instead of taking lawnmowers out there. And they're talking about what a safety savings that has been for their company. So, yeah, any other way to remove that grass other than using a tractor would be great.
Okay, so let's go back through some things as we wrap up our discussion here. It is National Farm Safety and Health Week. Make sure that they're safe on their ATVs. Remember that the law has changed, right? And so they can be up on the roadways, but from country's point of view, they need to check with their agent to make sure they're covered too when they're on the roadways. We want to use ROPS. We want to make sure that if they enter the grain bins, they're tied off inside those grain bins, and they lock out, tag out, right? So they shut off all the flow of the grain, and they make sure that they put something on the augers so that people don't turn those on. Is there a way, place to pick that kind of thing up? By the way, I hadn't thought about that, a lockout, tagout. I was on the farm for a long time, but I don't ever remember seeing a little item. What do you use?
Sure. Those are something that's becoming more mainstream since OSHA's been pushing it so much in commercial, so it's slowly getting down to farmers. You can find those at electrical supply houses. You may be able to find them at your local farm and fleet. I'm not sure there. But if not, maybe check with the local Cooperative Extension Service. They're usually a really good resource on where to find all safety items or any items really around the farm.
Eric, thank you so much today.
Thank you for having me on.
Eric Van Asdale is with Country Financial. He's a commercial agribusiness senior loss control representative, joining us here on this Monday edition of The Farming World. It is National Farm Safety and Health Week. You'll be safe on the farm, and you have a good week. I'm Todd Gleason.